Leafs Nation, time has come to say goodbye. I'm forever grateful for the opportunity to coach the Toronto Maple Leafs. A dream come true for a boy from Brampton. I didn't get it done in the playoffs. I didn't help push our team over the line and deliver. I accept responsibility for that. No excuses. That's the job. I didn't get it done. Leafs Nation, you deserve your Stanley Cup. Your passion at home and on the road is unmatched. It's an incredible honor to coach the Maple Leafs.
All right, fan pregame on a baby Friday. Justin Cuthbert and Jesse Rubinoff. That was Sheldon Key from Parts Unknown.
Where in the world is Carmen Sandiego, aka Sheldon Keefe?
A beautiful location, at least. Yes. At least it looked like that.
There's water. Anytime there's water behind you, it's so peaceful.
Sun shining off a lake or river or ocean. We don't actually really know. Maybe Luke Fox knows. He'll join us in a moment to talk about, a pretty landmark day in the NHL and with the Toronto Maple Leafs specifically. Sheldon Keefe fired as head coach of the Toronto Maple Leafs. We will have Mark Stein on the other side of the break to talk a little hoops on a big night in the association. But let's jump right into the Keefe discussion, Jesse.
Yeah.
Initial thoughts, not necessarily a surprise. I think everyone was bracing for this. So what stood out for you today?
Yeah, look, you only get so many kicks at the can, right? And this is sort of the easy move, I believe. First of all, though, the video was incredibly classy and does wonders, I think, for how people look back on him. Obviously, there was a ton of undeniable regular season success. He will be looked upon as the guy who couldn't get over more than one hump one time in the postseason, but a very classy way for him to go out. This was the easy thing to do, JC. And now I hope the Leafs don't get sidetracked away from now doing the hard thing. The easy thing is to get rid of a coach. Mm-hmm. A coach is hired to be fired. You see this all the time in the NHL. It's a revolving door of the same guys over and over and over again. And the fact that he was the fifth longest tenured coach in the National Hockey League, he had enough chances to try and get the job done. That is the reality. But there is still something fundamentally off about this team. And what I hope desperately for the Toronto Maple Leaf fan base is that tomorrow during this press conference, there isn't the same old, we believe in our players, we believe in the core, we're going to try it again. I don't think personally that a head coaching change is enough to make this team move forward properly. And I just hope that they choose to do the hard thing on top of already doing the easy thing today.
Yeah, I'm with you in a lot of ways. I mean, it will be, this isn't enough, right? This team has to change in some ways. I'm not really sure how that's going to go, whether it's management, whether it's, you know, very close to ownership levels of management or a little bit lower than that, or just moves at the roster. But yeah, you're right. This was the easy part, especially when you mentioned the tenure thing and how long he's actually got a chance when this is a fleeting sort of line of work for NHL coaches. But just in the decision, like, I'm not really sure what the argument for was to keep him. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I do feel like he was a square peg and this was a round hole, and he might have been a great square peg. Maybe he was the best square peg, but Brad Treliving's building something that wasn't designed for Sheldon Keefe.
Totally.
Sheldon Keefe was brought in to coach Kyle Dubas's team. And when you have that inconsistency, I think it leads to inconsistent results. And I do think Sheldon Keefe did a good job in some spots. I'm not sure it was a perfect job. I'm not sure it was even much more than an adequate job, but it was good in a lot of ways and it lacked in others. And when you can point things like, you know, special teams failing, those are clear coaching deficiencies. I just feel like, this was the easy part and there was a lot of grounds to do it. The rationale is pretty solid and change was needed. It's just how far deep down that hole are you going to eventually go to bring something that's more meaningful maybe than just a coaching hire?
Yeah, he's a fall guy. And after five seasons and more so, it's a longer time if you look at some of the members of this core who have had the opportunity to go further in the playoffs. And his video, Sheldon Keefe's video today, was I think the first time that we've ever heard anyone associated with the Maple Leafs organization say, this is my fault. I'm personally responsible for not getting the job done and I accept it. And really, he did that on his exit press conference as well. But I think he knew that the writing was on the wall. And I think that was refreshing. It would have been nice to see him do it in addition to other players do it in their exit interviews as well. We need to see from this organization a change in culture where there's an acceptance of responsibility. Not everything is given to these players. And this is, I think, the first step in that direction. You've now seen the outgoing coach take responsibility. The players need to now be the ones who take responsibility as well.
It does to me feel a little ironic, though, that the words that you've been wanting to hear from members of the Maple Leafs were first heard when that person stepped out of the orbit.
From an outgoing coach.
Of the sheltered situation that is, you know, working for the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Honestly.
And finally, you get to hear what you've been waiting to hear. Luke Fox is our Sportsnet Maple Leafs reporter, so of course, we're dialing him up on a day like today. First question for you, Luke, like, do we know where Sheldon Keefe was today?
Bahamas? I don't know. It's probably Lake Ontario. Or something.
Water wasn't blue enough to be the Bahamas, I don't think.
Yeah. No, I'm lucky enough. I kind of live near the lake, and it looked pretty familiar. So, yeah, I don't know exactly, but he looks more relaxed already.
Mm.
My goodness. I remember right before the playoffs started, someone was asking him about the difference of, you know, coaching the Leafs in the playoffs versus the regular season. And he said, when you're in my position, every day feels like the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
So in some respect, I wonder if the stress is off a little bit. You know, he was coaching this season, the whole season long, like his job was on the line, which is kind of ironic because he was given a 2-year extension before the thing began, that would, you know, set him up to be financially secure and was supposed to take the pressure off, the lame duck status off. And maybe it stopped reporters like myself from asking questions about a contract that wasn't signed, but it never really took off the pressure. If this team was not going to get through round one again, everyone's within and outside kind of knew that he would be the fall guy here.
You mentioned Lake Ontario, and now I just have a vision of him setting up a tripod and like a ring light and delivering a piece of content from like outside, a condo near the downtown core. Is this the minimum requirement for you, Luke, this coaching change? I mean, obviously this is a crash and burn type of result, and it's been crash and burn types of results exclusively for this group. But everyone's talking about big change, something meaningful, drastic happening. And not even if something doesn't happen tomorrow, we don't see something this summer. Was this just the minimum requirement for the Maple Leafs to at least say and do something to address what is consistent failure?
Yeah, bare minimum. I mean, how many coaches even get a chance to go 1-5 in playoff series? You know, to consider that game 7. If Jim Montgomery loses that game and he blows 3-1 leads in back-to-back series, do you think there's any chance the Boston Bruins would stand for that, that they wouldn't hold them accountable right away? I think for sure both coaches were coaching for their jobs in that game, in that overtime, no less. So, you know, that doesn't mean Sheldon Keefe's a bad coach. I think he did a lot of good things. I think he's going to be even better the next time he gets a job. But for sure, you can't just have a guy who's lost that many times, who's been outcoached when it matters the most, even if, yes, he has some of the greatest regular seasons in Toronto Maple Leafs franchise under his belt. It was time, right? This is the minimum. So now where do you look? I actually thought it would have happened a summer ago when they got rid of Dubas. I thought it would be been a clean house. But I think the reason why is with the new GM, Tree Living has a card to play. So he protects himself for a year by keeping the focus on Keith for one more year. But I don't think this is enough to satisfy the fan base. Like you're saying, I think it's the bare minimum. I really do think it's time we have to look at the roster. I actually think it's overdue, you know? That, and when you say that, some people think, oh, you don't think they're good players? And that's not the case. I think it's a poor balance of funds, and you only have so much in the salary cap. They need to spend more on the blue line. They need to spend money on a goaltender that can be reliable and partnered with Joseph Woll, who I think has shown a lot of promise and has also shown that he can't stay healthy. So you got to take some money from the core five, I'll call them. I know it doesn't rhyme, and spread it farther down to the back end and to the crease.
Is there a chance that the players look at this as a move that absolves them of responsibility in the sense that this is what happens in the National Hockey League and now a new coach is going to come in here, whether it's Berube or somebody else, and we're going to get another opportunity to do this all over again, because we heard in Sheldon Keefe's video him taking responsibility. But what we didn't hear a lot of in the exit interviews was the players taking responsibility. And that has been a major gripe for this fan base, is there's no one who says, look, I need to be better in the postseason. I need to figure out a way for me, not just we as a team, but me personally, to be better. Is there just something up in this locker room where the players say, well, you know, it's not my fault. It's Sheldon Keefe's fault, or it was Mike Babcock's fault, and whoever comes in next, well, it'll be their fault too. Like, I'm just not sold on the fact that if there's just another voice in the room, suddenly these guys are going to start responding.
Yeah, I don't think anyone is, right? We've reached the point where you have to see it before you believe it. And, you know, part of me wants to blame the players for sure.
Yeah.
You know, I was there Monday, and you don't hear a lot of, I need to be better.
Right.
I'm getting paid X amount of dollars, and I need to score more goals in the playoff series. You don't hear anything that definitive. But part of it, I think, starts from the top. And, you know, when Kyle Dubas gets fired and the first phone call is from the president saying, hey guys, I know it might be a shock that the guy who gave you your multi-million dollar contracts is let go, but don't worry, you're safe. You're safe. You guys are okay. Don't worry.
Right.
Then why wouldn't you feel like there's no accountability, mm-hmm. right? It starts mm-hmm. from the top down. Why wouldn't you feel safe? Why wouldn't you feel like maybe this was someone else's fault and not mine? Now, the accountability thing is, I think, separate from the disappointment thing. I think the disappointment thing is really mounting, and that showed on Morgan Riley's face in particular. But I think the losing has been gone on for so long now, right? One playoff series win and so many losses, that are the same five guys going to report into camp in September, October, look each other in the eyes and say, oh, this year's going to be different. Now, bringing in a new coach will make it feel a little bit different, but I still wonder if the cuts have to go deeper than just the bench.
I want to circle back to something you said an answer to earlier. You mentioned, like, Keith was kept around by Treliving, so Treliving would have that extra layer of protection. I think this layers of protection is definitely something that inflicts or afflicts this franchise, at least in my opinion. But how did it inflict Brad Treliving so soon? Like, is this just the way general managers and executives in hockey operate, where everyone has to be thinking about that layer of protection? Or is this just a Leaf thing, and he comes in and maybe he's being advised to be like, you know what, I want to take some pressure off you, whoever that might be. Let's keep Keefe around just so that you have your opportunity to make sure that you're putting yourself or setting yourself up best for success.
Well, I do think he had the choice. It's my understanding he had the choice to keep Keefe around or to let him go. And that's why, you know, Keefe was left twisting in the wind for so long last summer, which, you know, I'm sure was very stressful on him. But Treliving had like hours and hours of meetings with the guy before he decided, no, I'm going to stick with him. And part of that might have been him looking at the landscape at the time and saying, okay, who is definitely an upgrade? And is that worth also putting my job 1 year more at risk? I mean, it was the same thing when he got the Calgary job. He accepted the coach. He didn't fire the coach right away and let him run out a year first. So, you know, it's strategic. And I like the point you make about it being in the organization. And what my hunch is, we'll see what they say. We'll, you know, give them the benefit of the doubt and see what they say tomorrow morning. But my hunch is the same with Keith Pelley. A lot of people are calling for Brendan Shanahan's head. Mm-hmm. They say, hey, 10 years, one playoff series win. Like, what other hockey operations president gets that long of a leash? He should go. Maybe this starts from the top. And Keith Pelley comes in and say, hey, it's my first year on the job. Let me get to know Shanahan. Let me work with them for a year. The layers of protection thing is very real, I think.
Yeah, I think that's such a good point. Like, people always talk about, you know, Toronto being such a mecca of hockey. But how intriguing of a position actually is the Toronto Maple Leafs head coaching position? Because you obviously see the stress that is involved in coaching the Toronto Maple Leafs. You have a situation where they just haven't been able to get over the hump, potentially some players are not responding to their head coach anymore, and there's just a lot involved in the situation. When you stack it up against maybe other head coaching openings in the National Hockey League, how intriguing actually is the Toronto Maple Leafs head coaching position?
It's amazing. Yeah. What an opportunity. This is the, you know, it's like taking over the Cubs, right? Like you could bring the first championship in forever, in generations, to the city. You have the most spotlight. You have the most pressure, but you also have a chance to do something incredible. And you could have a statue out there. Mm-hmm. There could be a coach on Legends Row with some of the players. Like, why not? And I think that's what draws people to the job. I mean, the type of guy who wants to be an NHL head coach is a confident guy. Mm-hmm. It's an ambitious guy. You know, it's not a... a high school gym teacher that's just doing it for the love of the sport wants to have his a healthy family life. It's someone who's all in, who lives and breathes it. You're a competitive person if you reach the level of being even having an interview for this job. So I understand the allure.
Do you watch Ted Lasso, Luke?
Yeah.
So we were talking about this with Frank yesterday. We didn't know, obviously, that Sheldon Keefe was going to be let go, but we had our assumptions. And he mentioned that that's the type of person they need to coach this team, Lasso. And I don't see any Lasso in Craig Berube, even though I don't know if he was partly joking, but I did joke back, and he was kind of pretty stone-faced in the assessment that, yeah, they need someone to come in and make people feel good. And I feel like that was Sheldon Keefe. And I completely think the opposite. What attributes, what type of person do you believe can fix this?
I respectfully disagree with Frank. I don't think they need the good cop. And that doesn't mean they need, you know, fire and brimstone. They do need someone to work with this group. But this group, I think, has been probably a little bit too coddled. Think about heading into game 7. Jim Montgomery calls out best player on the team. When this season's over and the Hart ballots are all revealed, Pasternak will probably be on a few of them, lower down, but he'll be on there. And he's facing like the ultimate game 7, and he says, we need more from Pasta. Could you even imagine Sheldon Keefe daring stepping in front of the microphone and saying, we need more from Mitch Marner? It wasn't going to happen.
No.
I think they need someone with some experience, with some clout. That doesn't mean, you know, they need Mike Babcock to return. I think there is some sort of happy medium, but I don't see them looking for a guy that, you know, is coming in with fresh ideas and low experience. They're going to bring in a heavy hitter. And I don't think it is all going to be all, you know, sunshine and rainbows like Ted Lasso.
Where does this leave the assistants? Because Guy Boucher was trending every single night the Toronto Maple Leafs were playing. He was responsible for the power play, and the power play went 1-for-21. So what is the situation there? Because as we know it, as of right now, Sheldon Keefe is the one guy who has been the fall guy for this Toronto Maple Leafs team. Is a new head coach going to be able to bring in, you think, his own staff? Or is Guy Boucher and Vin Ryan going to get a chance to really see this thing through?
I don't know how Guy Boucher, you know, survives this.
Yeah.
1-for-21 in the playoffs. And
he might have Shanahan, though, as a layer of protection.
Yeah.
Maybe. But he took a really good power play, and it got worse under his watch with all the same personnel. So that's a tough one for me. You're right. They didn't make any announcement on the assistants. I was mildly surprised because they didn't just clear the bench and do something more dramatic. But then when I thought about it, I think what they're doing is, hey, let's give our new head coach, whoever it is, the option. Much like they gave Trey Living the option on Keefe. It's like, let's not rush anything. They've shown tremendous patience. You could argue too much patience, but they've shown tremendous patience throughout this whole plan, right? So I think this is just, let's do the courtesy of the new head coach, just in case we get into a situation where he's like, oh, hey, I like Guy. I have a relationship with Guy. I could work with him. I think I can get more out of him. You know, Mike Van Rijn, I'm going to be a little less hard on him, because I do think the Leafs did take steps defensively, particularly when their season was on the line. I see their issues there more with personnel, but I think this is the keeping the assistants alive. They should not feel comfortable. And I think that this is just Shanahan and Trey Living giving the option to whoever the head coach is, just to make sure that they're fine with letting them go.
If you were to attribute a percentage of blame for the 5-year tenure of Sheldon Keefe and the lack of progress past beating the Tampa Bay Lightning and winning one playoff series, between the coaches and the players, who deserves what percentage for why the Toronto Maple Leafs are where they are right now?
Oh, I mean, I guess more players. I'm not blaming Sheldon Keefe so much. I actually probably blame the management most of all, because I think the roster construction isn't right. And I do think he got a lot out of them, particularly in the regular season. Yeah. Like I never got the sense they gave up on him. You know, there was dips and there was panic in the city during those dips, even something as brief as a 4-game losing skid. And he got it back on the rails. So, you know, it's hard for me to blame him. The other thing is hard for me to blame him is because he was inexperienced. You know, he got out coached in almost every playoff series he went in, but in a lot of those situations, he was going against a guy who had more experience.
Right.
You know, he's going head to head with John Tortorella, head to head with John Cooper. You know, the Dominic Ducharme one was a tough one. I really feel like unless somehow this core gets back on the rails and does have a deep run, we might look back on 2021 in the Canadian division as that was their best chance. That was their best chance, and they blew it. And I think coaching played a lot into that particular series.
Yeah, it didn't play out this coaching change like most. Like with good teams, it's usually, hey, they don't want to play for the guy anymore, or there's just an absence of winning. And really, this is kind of an isolated situation with Keefe and just given a lot of opportunity but not getting done in the very specific time that it needs to be done. A last one for you, Luke, got about a minute. What would you assess? I don't know. I don't want to put a percentage on it, but just the likelihood of Mitch Marner being convinced that there may be greener pastures out there.
It's a great question. And I think it's the one that's at the front of a lot of people's minds. I'm going to say 50-50. Mm. Yeah, he has the no move, but how aggressive are Shanahan, Trey Living going to be here? Are they going to say, look, we're not going to give you William Nylander money next summer. We're not interested in that. I know you want that kind of money. Based on your individual stats, you deserve that kind of money. A player of you and like you in your prime doesn't hit the market. But you're not going to get it here because we're going to decide to spend that money on the blue line, on depth forwards, on goalies, and have a more balanced roster. We can't do this anymore. So can we work with you to try and find a place that you would like to re-sign? I think that's a difficult conversation, but I think it's a necessary conversation. And the ball's in his court. If he wants to say, no, I'm walking this right out the door till July 1, 2025, it's his right to do so.
It should be a scene tomorrow. Brendan Shanahan, Brad Treliving, Keith Pelley, all taking the podium, and you'll be there, Luke. We look forward to your question and all the answers that we may or may not get. Thanks for jumping on.
Thanks, Luke.
Okay. Going to be a busy offseason, I think.
it's going to be a busy offseason. We hope for the Maple Leafs, right? Yeah. Like, it will be probably the most frustrating situation if just, you know, nothing happens, right? And then we're twisting in the wind, or fans and Leafs Nation is twisting in the wind the same way, I guess, Sheldon Keefe did last summer. The only difference is there's not 2 years of guaranteed salary for those who are, you know, waiting for big things to happen this offseason.
What do you think the chances are that Keith Pelley and Brad Treliving and Brendan Shanahan get to the podium tomorrow and they say, we believe in this core, we're going to run it back, we think we're close, and echo a lot of the same sentiments that we heard from the players?
Yeah, I think it's going to be really difficult for them to phrase it that way, right? Like, I imagine
Got to be wordsmiths in this situation.
Yeah, even if that's how they feel or those are the intentions, saying that would be really, really difficult. They've had a full week to strategize here.
Synonyms.
So I imagine they'll figure out a way to navigate and stick handle that. Big night in the NBA playoffs tonight. We've got a really, really good game on Sportsnet. Dallas and OKC. We got Mark Stein on the other side. Plus, we'll run down the NHL games on Sportsnet tonight. So we'll do that after the break.
Diving deep into Leafs, Raptors, Jays, and NFL. The J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Back on the Fan pregame, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and we're up on Sportsnet 360. I know you'll be dialed into Sportsnet 1 tonight. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and the Oklahoma City Thunder will look to take a 2-0 series lead over the Dallas Mavericks in the Western Conference Final. You shared with me that you got a 100-1 ticket on OKC.
I mean, I wasn't going to brag.
I'd be pulling out my hair sweating that one.
Yeah.
I had the opportunity.
Well, I put a lot of gel in, so I couldn't do that. It's kind of stuck to my head today.
Sticky.
But yeah, it's I'm not going to say it's looking great, but it's looking decent because that is a very good basketball team who is blossoming at the right time. You just sort of wonder, and we'll ask Mark Stein this obviously, is it a little bit too soon? Is it a touch too soon? Because their average age is like 22 and a half. Like, how is this possible? These guys aren't supposed to be here, but yet top seed in the West. Continue to get it done. They look excellent. So you don't want to let your mind wander when you got 100-1, but we're letting the mind wander a little bit.
At the very least, it's highly hedgeable, Jesse Rubinoff. Mark Stein is NBA insider and curator of the Stein Line on Substack, and he joins us now. What's up, Mark? Thanks for jumping on.
Gents, I'm good. How's it going?
We're doing pretty good. Jesse, a little bit better than me, given what's at stake here in the Western Conference semifinal. But we'll let you answer the question. Oklahoma City Thunder, their readiness to compete behind Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and a bunch of, 20-somethings?
Yeah.
Well, let's clarify this. Is it 100-1 to win it all or just 100-1 to get out of this round?
Great question. No, it's a great question.
It
is to win it all, but it is each way. So I believe I get half if they make it to the NBA finals and they don't have to win it. So there's that.
Okay. I don't want to burst your bubble. I don't see them. Look, if the Minnesota Timberwolves can do what they're doing to the Denver Nuggets, they immediately supplant Denver as the title favorite to go into Denver and discombobulate the defending champs the way they have for two games. It's only two games, and there are a handful of examples in NBA history where a team has lost two at home and still found a way to win the series. Based in Dallas, I've actually covered the Mavericks both winning and losing the series in that scenario. So it can happen, but Minnesota is just, I'm not trying to take anything away from the Thunder because they have been quietly sensational in these playoffs. You guys said it, they're the youngest playoff team ever to be doing the stuff they're doing. They haven't lost a game yet. But whoever they see in the next round, assuming they can beat the Mavericks, and there's still a long way to go in this Dallas series, but let's play along and raise your hopes to some degree.
Look,
in the conference finals, it would be a monstrous ask for them to beat either Denver or Minnesota.
Yeah, like you brought me right back down to earth.
They're off to a great start in this series, no question.
Yeah, right back down to earth, which is where I should be because, look, you're right. The Minnesota Timberwolves, I mean, it's funny because Shai Gilgeous-Alexander ends up being second in MVP voting, and we'll get to that conversation in a second. But it certainly feels like this NBA playoffs has been the Anthony Edwards show. Like, this has become Ant's NBA playoffs, his coming out party, and it does feel a little bit like, I mean, some other guys would have some things to say about this, but it does feel like if you have a Thunder Timberwolves Western Conference final here, it's almost a duel between who's the next young face of the NBA between Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Anthony Edwards. Am I onto something there?
I really don't want to spoil everything you suggest, but I am staunchly against the face of the I'm sorry, that's just like, you guys don't really know me, so I don't want to come down too hard on you. I cannot, that whole face of the league thing, just, I don't know why, but to me that is a media discussion, like, and it I don't know that it really exists, but that's a rant for another day. But look, Anthony Edwards has been unreal in these playoffs and makes Minnesota so good. It's not just him. I mean, it's these guys they've played the best defense in the league all season. And it's not just how big they are up front with three centers. You know, they don't even have Rudy Gobert in game two and still run Denver out of its own gym. But just the size and physicality they have on the perimeter with Edwards, with McDaniels, with Nikhil Alexander Walker making a contribution now. Like, they are just their defense first and an absolute handful. And the Thunder, what they've really benefited from is, you know, they're the number one seed, but, like, it's only now that they're playing these games against Dallas in round two that we're really paying attention. Like, they swept New Orleans in round one, but that series got so little attention. Mm-hmm. But now there really is a focus on what SGA and the Thunder are doing.
We're chatting with Mark Stein of the Stein Line on Substack. What makes Oklahoma City potentially special? Is it that Shea is that special player, or is it the supporting cast around Shea that helps to not only fill out the roster but elevate Shea and give you more than maybe you're expecting from a team in a similar situation? I know it's the team concept that makes them what they are, but if we're talking about Shea and the MVP and we're talking about supporting cast, can you separate those two?
They've got a lot of things going for them in Mark Daigneault, who just won Coach of the Year, but he is still seen as underrated and still kind of an unknown quantity. But when you talk to scouts from other teams, like it must have been 10 times this season that I would talk to a scout from another team and they would just bring up, somehow the conversation landed on how creative Daigneault is. And again, he's not a coach that anybody really talks about, even though he just won Coach of the Year. And they are very deep. They don't have size. That's the weakness, the supposed weakness that this team has. And that's what the Mavericks coming into this series thought they could really exploit, because the Mavericks added so much length and depth at the trade deadline with their acquisitions of Daniel Gafford and PJ Washington. But okay, the Thunder are not big, but they defend really well as a team themselves. They pounded Dallas on the board in game one. They have a lot of their own defensive physicality on the perimeter with Williams and obviously Lou Dort. So they have, and they must be, are they Canada's number two team with SGA and Dort there?
No question.
Yeah, we're claiming the Thunder.
I know nothing compares to the Raptors, but they've got to be, They've got to have some level of fandom and attention.
As long as Jamal Murray keeps throwing heat packs, yeah, it's the Thunder.
Yeah, there's no question. I mean,
that's the good news. There are so many Canadians all over the league. There's more than one nominee for that honor. But, man, the Thunder, like I said, this series is the national awareness and North American awareness of the Thunder is really going to increase in this round, because they're playing a marquee opponent and they've got a shot at the conference finals, a really good shot.
No question. The Denver Nuggets up against it a little bit against the Minnesota Timberwolves, but yesterday Nikola Jokic wins yet another MVP award. He is one of nine players now to have won it three times. In your opinion, Mark, did the voters get it right this time?
Yes, but look, SGA and Doncic, to me, they both had really worthy cases. I think you could make a passionate case for any of the three, and it could have been the right answer depending on what you're looking for. But, you know, look, none of these guys had an all-star sidekick. So they're all doing, you know, they're all carrying massive loads for their team. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, Jokic, you know what? I think the problem for Jokic now is, but just because of when the award is being announced, this series is going so badly for the Nuggets. Jamal Murray, you have to think that the cast is an issue. I mean, that doesn't excuse losing his composure, and look, he's very fortunate to only be fined and not suspended for game three tomorrow night, but he's not at full capacity, and Jokic, frankly, is going to have to come up with even more than normal to get Denver out of this hole. I mean, a 2-0 series deficit is massive going now to Minnesota for two games. But look, Jokic is, I mean, you guys, his numbers are, his numbers are off the charts. And, you know, again, some people would argue passionately for SGA. Where I live in Dallas, there's, you know, outrage that Luka didn't win, but, you know, all three, this was a, my surprise is that it just wasn't close. Right. To me, this should have been a much closer race. I think all three guys have a legitimate claim to the award.
So what are you expecting for Denver from Denver in games three and four here? Obviously down 0-2, losing both games on their home floor. I mean, we've all heard of 3-2-1 Cancun. I'm worried we might get a 3-2-1 Serbia here and not much of an effort from the Denver Nuggets. Do you think that they will respond, or is it, you know, after a really long season last year, maybe it's time to pack it in?
I mean, you know, if they get swept, I mean, they are going to face all kinds of heat and criticism. And, you know, that would be to see a defending champion swept. You don't see that every day. I think the last time we saw it was the Lakers when they lost to Dallas in 2011. I'd have to double check that one to be sure. But that would be, you know, for Jokic to win MVP, and then if they were to get swept out of here, that would be, I mean, not that Jokic is really dialing into what we're talking about on shows like this, but I mean, there would be a level of scrutiny and criticism, I think, that would be pretty substantial thrown at Denver's way. I felt coming into this series, whoever won this series was going to have to win twice on the other team's floor. So, I mean, I expect Denver to be able to go into Minnesota and win at least a game, but the Wolves have already won twice in Denver. I mean, they are just in a fantastic position with tons of confidence. And look, their coach can't even fully coach because of the knee injury Chris Finch sustained in the sweep clinching game in the Phoenix series. So you have, I mean, the Wolves have been the story of this postseason so far. I mean, this is a franchise that across 34 years, they had only won two playoff series, and they're off to a 6-0 start in these playoffs. It's just crazy.
There's a lot of likable teams, I think, left in the NBA playoffs. The Timberwolves are certainly one of them. And I think another one is watching the New York Knicks and the fun that exists at Madison Square Garden when things are going well. Like, why do you think the Knicks are becoming sort of a likable team? I know that's controversial, I'm sure, in many other places around the U.S. and Canada. But is it because they've been losers for so long and it's almost refreshing to see them having a little bit of success? Is it the scrappiness of a guy like Jalen Brunson? Like, what is it about this Knicks team that is endearing to people that watch them?
Yeah, I don't think it's hard to root for Jalen Brunson. I got to cover his first four seasons pretty closely, and the guy just gets better. He's still getting better every single year. I mean, it's rare that you see a player. I mean, he's in what, year six now, and he's found a way. He just keeps finding a way to find another gear, which, you know, that you wouldn't really expect that to happen at this stage of his career. But look, this is hardly an opinion exclusive to me. I mean, it is just a wonderful place to watch a game. And it's one of those places that when MSG is rocking, you can feel it through the TV. I mean, you can feel it watching in Toronto what's going on in New York. And there's not a lot of buildings like that in the NBA. But MSG is a magical place when the Knicks are playing like this and it's rocking like it's been. So I think that's part of it. I mean, I'm old school. Like, in my arenas, I want a great organist playing unbelievable music. And it's just like the MSG soundtrack is magic. And, you know, like I said, you watch a Knicks game, and when they're winning, even if you're sitting on your couch, you can feel that through the TV.
We're chatting with Mark Stein. You mentioned that the Oklahoma City Thunder might be the second most popular team in Canada. The other options are teams with former Raptors. Yeah. And the Knicks have OG, of course, Pascal Siakam with the Pacers. But I do want to talk about OG, who's out tonight, and the matchup potentially with the Boston Celtics in the Eastern Conference Final if we, in fact, get there. I mean, Jason Tatum has been struggling, but the key to the series may just be OG and taking out Boston's best player in Jason Tatum, although, again, hasn't necessarily performed like it yet. Is OG, for you, Mark, the key to the Knicks potentially having upset potential in the Eastern Conference Final if we get that matchup?
Well, if Tom Thibodeau gets a hold of the tape of this chat we're having, he's not going to be very happy that we're skipping all the way to the Eastern Conference Final. I think sooner than that. I mean, look, the Knicks are so banged up with no Randle, no Mitchell Robinson that, okay, yes, they have a 2-0 series lead, but OG Anunoby's already been ruled out for game three. I mean, the Knicks, they're going to, you know, I'm sure if you ask Thibodeau, he would say, we need OG just to get through this round. I mean, I don't think we've heard the last from the Pacers. Obviously, it's become an absolute firestorm with the criticism that Rick Carlisle has leveled at the officiating and all the criticism that Carlisle is now absorbing on his end for making those complaints and not having TJ McConnell on the floor late in game two. But the Knicks, as amazing as their trio of Villanova alumni have been, you know, they might need OG just to get out of this round. Mm. Because like I said, I don't, you know, going back to Indy for two, I think it's too soon to write the Pacers off. And look, the Celtics overall, I mean, they're not going to come out and say it, but they have to be loving what's happening all around them in the East. Yep. You know, we anticipated coming into the season that they're going to have to face Milwaukee or Philly along the way, maybe both.
Yeah.
And they're not going to see either one. And they saw a very diminished Miami Heat. And this may be this, you know, this could be a lovable darling edition of the Knicks, but they're going to be pretty banged up if the Knicks get there to the conference final. So the Celtics have their own issues. They've got to get Porzingis right. The Celtics might be able to get out of the East without having Porzingis back. If they can just get Porzingis back for the final. So I think Boston is in a pretty comfortable position right now.
I'd argue maybe too comfortable. Like, I'm just watching Jason Tatum and the little that I have caught, because frankly, they're meaningless games at this point. At least everything that Boston's played so far seems that way. Like, he's just not performing like the normal superstar that leads the line for a team that wins a championship. Should Celtics fans be worried about what they've seen from Jason Tatum so far in these playoffs?
Maybe they are to some degree, but I think the Celtics are just so ridiculously deep that they can withstand if, you know, Jason Tatum isn't amassing these 35-point offensive masterpieces. And even when he's not, you know, he's still a factor on the defensive end. But they are just, this is why Brad Stevens won Executive of the Year. And it's a big reason why Porzingis has been more effective than we've ever seen him, because he is a great difference maker. He stretches the floor. He brings a level of inside defense and size that the Celtics haven't had. But there are nights when there's so much talent there that it covers for him. I mean, you know, Derek White late in the season won a Player of the Week award. You see what Derek White is doing in these playoffs, and is Derek White the fourth best Celtic? Is he the fifth best Celtic? Like, if you put Porzingis, you know, Jrue Holiday, Porzingis, and Derek White, I don't know how you want to rank them, but they're all 3 through 5 in terms of the Celtic hierarchy that starts with Tatum and Brown. So, I mean, they just have, there's so much talent at the top of their rotation that, you know, yes, you would love to see Tatum. I mean, it was jarring to some degree to see the MVP results come out and Tatum wasn't even top five. That does kind of stagger you to a degree. But, I mean, the Celtics, the only thing that matters for them right now, they have to win it all, however they get there. And, you know, I think they have such a good group to get basically share the burden that I don't see that as a concern yet.
Last one for me. I know you're based in Dallas. What's up with Luka's knee? He just does not look the same. And if he isn't, in fact, the Luka that we have become accustomed to, is that jam done, as they say, for the Dallas Mavericks in this postseason?
Yeah, I mean, look, he's nowhere close to where we're used to seeing him. And I don't think there's any question that it's a significant factor in his play. I mean, he's missed 30 of his last 35 threes. That just does not happen.
Right.
I mean, this guy is a big stage performer. So he took a hit that was even, I was there in the arena. It was just hard to catch it in game three of the Clippers series. It's been bothering him ever since. And the truly worrisome part for the Mavs is, you know, they had a 3-4 day break before this series. And he came out in game one and clearly didn't have the same zip and mobility that you would have expected. It's every other day now. There are no more days off. So even though the travel in this series is very easy, shuttling back and forth between OKC and Dallas, and that flight doesn't even last an hour, but to have no Moxie Kleba, who is their most versatile front court defender, a floor stretcher, a super smart defender, an important rebounder for them. So Dallas doesn't have Kleba against a team where you would really want him because of the way that Oklahoma City plays offensively. You really needed Kleba in your defense. So they don't have Moxie Kleba. And if they have a half-speed Doncic, I mean, that is a lot to overcome against the Thunder the way they're playing.
Hey, Mark, we appreciate the time tonight. Let's do this again. And, yeah, enjoy the games and the rest of round two.
Sounds good, guys.
That's Mark Stein, the Stein Line on Substack, NBA Insider. That last question segues, I think, pretty nicely to best bets tonight. But let's go through the docket because we got three great games on Sportsnet tonight across two different leagues. Two of the hottest teams in the Stanley Cup playoffs are in action tonight, undefeated so far in the playoffs. 6-0, New York Rangers, plus 140, looking to take a 3-0 series lead over the Hurricanes. Pyotr Kochetkov gets the start in net over Freddie Anderson. Rest is what they're going for with Freddie, but I think it might be a little bit more than rest. At 9:30, Avalanche, plus 115, riding a five-game win streak, looking to avoid dropping, or Dallas, excuse me, looking to drop to avoid dropping first two games at home for a second straight series. Not sure they can recover twice from that. And of course, we've mentioned on Sportsnet 1, SGA and the Thunder -5 at home to Dallas, looking to go up 2-0. Your bet is from that game.
Yeah. Well, first of all, some crazy comebacks in the NHL playoffs as of late, obviously last night with Vancouver and Edmonton and Colorado in game one against Dallas. So it's been a lot of fun. So buckle up, I'm sure, for those two games again tonight. My best bet is going to be, naturally, Shea Gilgeous-Alexander and the Oklahoma City Thunder, -5 at home against Dallas. You just heard from Mark Stein, who is based in Dallas, one of the most respected in the business, talk to us about how Luka Doncic is a shell of his former self. The three numbers are out of control. His shooting is completely off. They're going to need Kyrie Irving to save them. And I just don't think they can do it against this upstart Oklahoma City Thunder team. Yeah, maybe the Thunder won't roll all the way to the NBA Finals, but I think they continue their success tonight against the Mavs.
I'm actually kind of relieved that Doncic is hurt because I feel like I'm going crazy. I've only seen a fraction of Dallas Mavericks action this year, of course. There's only so much time that you can spend in a day, but it feels like every time I watch Luka, he's trash. Mm. And it's like, this guy's third in MVP. He's widely regarded as one of the, if not the best player in the NBA, maybe the best scorer naturally. And I'm watching him and he's just like bricking shots and it's just like so underwhelming. And I'm like, something's got to be off here because what am I missing? And of course, now we're getting more news that he's banged up here and he's not looking right. So if that's the case, I like it too. I mean, the Thunder, they're just playing so well. They just feel so far above what would be a replacement level team in the Dallas Mavericks if Luka's not special, right?
Great crowd,
their
too.
Whole thing requires Luka to be special. 100%. And if he's not, I feel like it's going to be another win for the Oklahoma City Thunder. I'm going to the Rangers and Hurricanes, but I'm not, although I should, because we're kind of hot in the show. I'm going to go to not a game tonight that's going to be settled or a bet that's going to be settled tonight. But Kochetkov coming in for Freddie Anderson, I think, is a big deal because Kochetkov can be argued as better than Freddie Anderson. And if they get on a run here, they're down 2-0 right now. It would be a season-saving win, a playoff-saving win, maybe a coach-saving win with Rod Brendamore if they can get this to 2-1 and get themselves back into the series. And if the good vibes start to roll with Kochetkov, wouldn't you keep him for the rest of the playoffs? Especially with Frederick Anderson's history. So Kochetkov, if he steals the net tonight, Carolina is going to be what? In the handful of teams, like top three, top four, in terms of the Stanley Cup, if they can get the series back to certainly level footing. Kochetkov 200 to win the Conn Smythe, I think, is a bet you have to make if you think Carolina can win tonight.
Look, I'm not saying it's a lock, but I like it. I like it a lot. You look at his numbers over the course of his career. Like, the guy's over 900 save percentage every year, 233 goals against average this year. You're right. If they get hot, he usually goes to a goalie in a situation like this. No one's been incredible for the Hurricanes to this point.
Carolina does not, they do not have an obvious
depth
pick.
It's depth.
Outside of a goaltender.
Totally.
So for that reason, I think
100 to 1 and 200 to 1. Look at us.
We're cooking.
Unbelievable.
Here. Ailish, by the way, who's off, if you haven't noticed. She likes Montreal in regulation tonight, plus 120. PWHL playoffs continue tonight against Boston. So, yeah, I'll be betting Montreal tonight. This was fun. Just awesome, a reminder, buddy. On Sportsnet tonight, game three and a game two, Carolina, New York, Colorado, Dallas, and on Sportsnet 1, Dallas and OKC. Big day tomorrow in Leafland. Pelly, Shanahan, Treliving. We'll see what happens. Thanks for filling in, Jesse. Thanks.